Thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode until the question-and-answer session of today's conference. At that time, you may press star 1 on your phone to ask a question. I would like to inform all parties that today's call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I would now like to turn the conference over to Mr. John Bateman. Thank you. You may begin.
Thanks, Chelsea. Good morning, and thank you for joining this monthly climate update call, part of the suite of climate services that NOAA provides to government, business, academia, and the public to support informed decision-making. I'm John Bateman with NOAA Communications, and I'll be facilitating the call today. If you have any additional questions after the conclusion of today's call, my colleague John Leslie and I can both be reached by email, and I will spell that email address for you. It's nesdis.pa@noaa.gov. Today's update will feature three short presentations followed by an operator-assisted question and answer session. A copy of the presentation our speakers will be following can be downloaded from the link in the media advisory. If you don't have that link, I will spell that for you as well. It can be found at https://www.ncdc.noaa.gov/SOTC/BRIEFINGS. With that, I'll introduce our speakers. The first presenter is Ira Sanchez Lugo, a climatologist with NOAA's National Centers for Environmental Information, who will provide a summary of the August U.S. and Global Climate Report, as well as the latest drought monitor update. Our second presenter is Adam Smith, lead scientist for the U.S. billion-dollar weather and climate disasters analysis at NOAA's National Centers for Environmental Information, who will discuss the billion-dollar disasters that struck the U.S. in August 2020 and also provide an update for the year so far. And our third presenter is Brad Few, a meteorologist at NOAA's Climate Prediction Center, who will provide the latest El Niño-La Niña update, as well as the temperature, precipitation, and drought outlook for the months of October, November, and December. Our first speaker will be Ira from NOAA. Ira?
Thank you, John, and thanks to everyone who joined in today. I'm going to go ahead and start on slide 2 to look at the global temperatures for the month of August. So the month of August was warmer than average across much of the globe. As you can see on the map on the left, about 8% of the world's land and ocean surfaces had a record warm August temperature. Some of these areas include the Western Pacific Ocean, the North Indian Ocean, Northern Russia, and the Southwestern contiguous U.S. Areas with cooler than average conditions included Far East Russia and across parts of the Southern Indian Ocean and the Central and Eastern Tropical Pacific Ocean. However, no land or ocean areas had a record cold August temperature. Averaged as a whole, the global land and ocean surface temperature for August 2020 ranked as the second highest in the 141-year record, trailing behind 2016. The 10 warmest Augusts have all occurred since 1998. However, the 5 warmest Augusts have occurred since 2015. The month of August marks the end of the Northern Hemisphere meteorological summer and the Southern Hemisphere winter. During the three-month season, we saw warmer than average conditions across, again, much of the globe, with record warm temperatures during the three-month season across parts of Southern and Northern Asia, North and South America, as well as the Caribbean, Northern Indian Ocean, and the Western Pacific Ocean. Again, no land or ocean areas had a record cold June through August temperature. Averaged as a whole, the global land and ocean surface temperature for the three-month period was the third highest on record at 0.92 degrees Celsius or 1.66 degrees Fahrenheit. Only June through August of 2016 and 2019 were warmer. The northern hemisphere had its warmest summer on record at 1.17 degrees Celsius, or 2.11 degrees Fahrenheit above average, surpassing what is now the second warmest such period set in 2016 and again in 2019. The five warmest summers for the northern hemisphere have occurred since 2015. Meanwhile, the southern hemisphere winter temperature departure of 0.67 degrees Celsius or 1.21 degrees Fahrenheit tied with 1998 as the fifth warmest winter in the 141-year record. Moving now to slide three, looking at the global year-to-date temperatures. The global through August, the January through August 2020 global temperature was 1.03 degrees Celsius or 1.85 degrees Fahrenheit above the 20th century average. And this was the second warmest January through August period. Only 2016 was warmer. As you can see from the map, the first 8 months of the year had warmer than average conditions across much of the globe. Regionally, Europe, Asia, and the Caribbean region had their warmest January through August period. And South America had a January through August temperature that ranked as the second highest on record. Meanwhile, North America, Africa, and Oceania had a top 10 warm January through August on record. Cooler than average conditions were limited to parts of Alaska, Western Canada, Northern India, and across the Southern Oceans. However, no land or ocean areas had a record cold January through August temperature. According to our analysis, the year 2020 is virtually certain to rank among the five warmest years on record, with about a 40% chance of it being the warmest year on record and about a 55% chance of it being the second warmest year. Moving now to slide four to look at the U.S. So averaged as a whole, the U.S. had its third warmest August on record, behind 1983 and 2011. So during the month, a high-pressure system was present across the western contiguous U.S. during mid-August, which helped drive the record heat that we saw across much of the Southwest. During this time, we saw several temperature records that were set. The most notable one was the one that occurred on August 16 in Death Valley, California, where a temperature, maximum temperature of 130 degrees Fahrenheit was observed. And that temperature record is being going through a review process. And if it is verified, this temperature would be the warmest August temperature on record for the U.S. and the third warmest temperature for any month across the U.S. So looking at the map, the temperature map, above average August temperatures were observed across much of the U.S. with record warm statewide temperatures observed across the western U.S., specifically California, Nevada, Arizona, Utah, New Mexico, and Colorado, which had their warmest August on record. There were some states that had cooler than average conditions, but these were limited to Missouri, Oklahoma, and Arkansas. In terms of precipitation, most of the western half of the contiguous U.S. had below average precipitation, while parts of the eastern half had above average conditions. Averaged as a whole, the U.S. had its driest August since 2011. There were several states that had one of their three driest Augusts on record, and these include Arizona, Utah, and Nebraska, which had their driest August on record, while New Mexico and Iowa had their second and third driest on record, respectively. On the other side of the spectrum, Maryland had its fifth wettest August, and Virginia had its seventh wettest. However, no state had a record wet August. There were several tropical cyclones that impacted the continental U.S. However, I'm not going to go into details since I know that Adam will provide some information on that. But two of those were Hurricane Isaias and Hurricane Laura. Moving now to slide number five to look at the summer for the contiguous U.S. Above average temperatures were present across much of the U.S. during the summer, and this resulted in the fourth warmest summer on record. There were several states that had their warmest summer on record, and these include Arizona, Connecticut, Rhode Island, and Massachusetts. And there were 11 additional states that had a top five warm summer. However, as you can see from the map, no state ranked below average for the summer season. There were many stations, that across the Southwest, Southeast, the Mid-Atlantic and the Northeast that either tied or broke the record for the warmest summer on record. In terms of precipitation, the nation had its driest summer since 2012, and looking at the map, below average precipitation was observed across much of the West, parts of the Rockies, the Deep South, and from portions of the Central Plains to the Northeast. Arizona had its driest summer on record, receiving about 33% of its seasonal average. In terms of above average precipitation, that was observed across parts of the Southeast, parts of the Great Lakes, and the Northwest. And Virginia had its 10th wettest summer on record. Moving now to slide 6 to look at drought conditions across the contiguous U.S. As of September 15, this map was recently released this morning. So about 39% of the contiguous U.S. was in some type of drought. This is about 2 percentage points higher than a month ago. So as you can see from the map, much of the West and the Northeast is entrenched in some type of drought. So we did see some drought deterioration across the West, the Northeast, and Northern Alaska and Hawaii. The very dry and warm conditions that we saw during the month of August were conducive for the development of wildfires. And by mid-September, 16 active fires in California, Oregon, and Washington had burned at least 100,000 acres of vegetation. So, and I know that Adam will talk a little bit more about that. So we did see some drought improvements in the last month, and these were mainly occurred mainly across Texas, along the Midwest, and Puerto Rico. So that is all that I have for today. I will now turn it over to Adam Smith.
Hi, good morning. So first, I will highlight the $4 billion weather and climate-related disasters that happened across the United States during the month of August. And at the end, I will recap briefly what's happened so far in 2020. So on slide number 7, first, we'll begin with the Midwest derecho, which was on August 10th. The Midwest derecho traveled 770 miles across 14 hours across many states, particularly the Great Lakes and into the Ohio River Valley states. But the most profound impact happened over the state of Iowa. More than 10 million acres, or 43% of the state's crops, were affected by this high wind event. Corn would be the crop that was most affected. Just the crop losses alone are in the billions of dollars, and field work continues right now to understand how these crop damage totals will be finalized throughout the year. Cedar Rapids, Iowa, in particular, was heavily damaged by high wind gusts in excess of 100 miles per hour. I've added two maps at the top of slide 7 to kind of illustrate this. You can see Cedar Rapids is in the green and yellow zones with wind gusts in excess of 100 miles per hour. But what makes a derecho interesting is that the winds at these high rates happen not for minutes, but for many, many minutes, up to 45 minutes. So it's almost like an inland hurricane as far as the impacts, but not physically. Lastly, 15 weaker tornadoes were also developed from this derecho event as it ended in northeastern Illinois. Many of these weaker tornadoes affected the Chicago metropolitan area. Let's go to slide number 8. And this slide actually shows almost a literal footprint of the wind map from the August derecho. As you can see, it traveled across many states and was maximized in Iowa and also into Illinois. And the right side of that portion, you can see these black boxes, which illustrate where these tornadoes also were spawned from this derecho event. Let's move on to slide number 9. Another event that happened really began in earnest in August, but is accelerating into this month, and we have a lot of fire season still ahead of us, would be the Western wildfires. In particular, during the month of August, the California wildfires, which I'll briefly highlight. The first would be the August complex, which began as 37 separate wildfires within the Mendocino National Forest. And that was created around August 17th after a bunch of dry lightning, over 10,000 strikes, hit many parts of Northern California and started the blaze. Unfortunately, since August, this August complex fire has actually grown into the largest wildfire on record in California, about 800,000 acres, and these records date back to 1932. Two other wildfires I'd like to highlight would be the LNU Lightning Complex near Santa Rosa and the SCU Lightning Complex near San Jose, each of those in excess of 375,000 acres during the month of August. And those are now the second and third largest wildfires on record, dating also back to 1932. Unfortunately, thousands of homes and other structures have been destroyed, and many lives have also been challenged due to this disaster. The final note on this is that all five of the largest wildfires by area in California history have occurred since 2017. And also, it's important to know historical wildfires are also burning in Oregon, in Washington State, and Colorado, and the air quality has been some of the worst in the world for many days in many of these areas due to the wildfires. Go to slide number 10. Hurricane Isaias made landfall in Ocean Isle Beach, North Carolina, as a Category 1 hurricane, 85 miles per hour. But it also accelerated after landfall as it was going up the East Coast, resulting in widespread wind damage and power outages in many states, from Virginia to New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania. Of course, damage in North Carolina was pretty profound. Also, similar to the derecho, Hurricane Isaias produced a number of tornadoes as well. 34, in fact, developed across North Carolina, Virginia, Maryland, Delaware, and New Jersey. Fortunately, a number of these tornadoes were also on the weaker side, EF0 or EF1 tornadoes that produced scattered damage to agriculture, structures and residences and vehicles. But there were also several EF2 tornadoes and one EF3 tornado produced by ECIES across coastal North Carolina and Virginia that produced more heavy damage and a few fatalities as well. Let's move to slide number 11. Hurricane Laura, a very strong Category 4 Hurricane Laura, made impact across southwestern Louisiana. It was a 150-mile-per-hour hurricane at landfall on August 27th near Cameron, Louisiana. The damage was focused, in southwest Louisiana along the coast, but also well inland. But there were many broken water systems, and severely the electrical grid is severely damaged along southern Louisiana. So that's certainly going to slow the recovery process. And really impacts quality of life as well as they try to pick up the pieces and rebuild. This was the strongest hurricane to hit Louisiana since 1861. And Laura also had the highest landfall wind speed to make landfall in the United States since Hurricane Michael in 2018, which hit Florida. And with that, I'd like to turn it over. Oh, wait, sorry. Let me one more highlight. I just forgot. So, the first 6 months of the year in the United States was a pretty quick start. We had 10 separate weather and climate-related events. These were severe storm events with impacts from tornado, hail, and high wind damage across more than 30 states from the Great Lakes to the Gulf Coast. But now with the August events I just highlighted briefly, and then several events we've had into December and into the fall, the United States has a high likelihood of tying or even perhaps breaking the 40-plus year annual record for highest number of U.S. billion-dollar disasters to affect the country. So we're keeping tabs on that, and Wednesday, October 7th, we will actually be releasing more official data on this. Thank you.
All right. Thanks so much, Adam. Adam, let's toss it now over to Brad.
Great. Thank you, Adam. Hello, everybody. So in the next slides, number 12, look at ENSO. So currently we have below average equatorial sea surface temperatures from the dateline east to the South American coast. Oceanic and atmospheric observations currently reflect La Nina conditions. And we have positive sea surface temperature anomalies in the Gulf of Mexico and Caribbean Sea presently. La Nina conditions are likely to persist through the winter. Probabilities around 75% chance for those La Nina conditions persisting through the winter. And the most likely outcome into the early spring of 2021 is for La Nina also. Next slide, number 13, the October monthly forecast calls for increased chances of above normal temperatures throughout the United States. In terms of precipitation, above normal precipitation is favored for the Pacific Northwest, also the Florida Peninsula, parts of the Southeast Coast. And a large area of below normal precipitation is favored from the southwest, northeast towards the Ohio Valley. Next slide, number 14, the seasonal temperature forecast for October, November, December also calls for above normal temperatures throughout much of the United States. But the largest probabilities of above normal temperatures are forecast across the southwest. And those probabilities do taper off as you move northward to the Pacific Northwest, Northern Plains, Upper Midwest, with just a slight tilt for above normal temperatures favored for those areas. Above normal temperatures are also strongly favored for northern mainland Alaska. And in terms of precipitation, above normal precipitation, most likely during the next 3 months across parts of Alaska, as well as the Pacific Northwest and Northern Rockies. Conversely, below normal precipitation is favored for the Southwest and South Central United States. Probabilities for below normal precipitation do decrease as you move eastward along the Gulf Coast due to potential influences from tropical cyclones during October into early November. And final slide is the seasonal drought outlook. So with the wet October, November, December pattern favored and increasingly wet climatology, we are expecting slowly improving drought conditions over the Pacific Northwest and also improving conditions by the end of December across New England. Unfortunately, it looks like a expansion of drought is likely for California, south of San Francisco, and also the central southern plains. The southwest drought conditions are likely to persist and perhaps intensify due to the failed monsoon there and also the dry seasonal forecast. And in Hawaii, we are expecting improving conditions, and that's related to the La Nina conditions. And that's all I have. Thank you.
Great. Thanks so much, Brad. We will now take specific questions from the call participants. Please be sure to identify who you would like to answer the question if possible. Chelsea, could you please remind the call participants how they can ask a question and then please queue up the first question?
If you would like to ask a question, please press star, then one, unmute your phone, and record your name clearly when prompted. If you'd like to withdraw your question, press star two. The first question comes from Seth Bornstein from the Associated Press. Your line is now open.
Yes, thank you for doing this. These two questions would be for Adam. First is we had $4 billion weather disasters in August. What is the record for the most in a month? Is this the record? How close are we to it? And secondly, is there, when you look overall at billion-dollar disasters, an east-west divide in the type of disaster, billion-dollar disaster we see? In other words, do we see more drought and fire in the west and water-oriented in the east, and do you see trends there?
Hi, Seth. Yes, this is Adam Smith answering the questions. So first, the monthly record for the highest number of billion-dollar disasters in any month would be April 2011. I believe we had five separate billion-dollar disasters that were largely severe storm events, tornado outbreaks, hail, and thunderstorm wind events. The second question regarding, you know, the kind of the spatial trends we've seen, indeed, particularly since the year 2000, the West, much of the West, which is semi-arid, a semi-arid climate anyway, has been in continuous variable levels of drought, followed by increasingly severe wildfire seasons. We saw in 2017 and 2018 back-to-back catastrophic California wildfire seasons. Unfortunately, it looks like 2020 is following the same track as far as wildfire damage and spread. And then in the East, what's interesting is we've seen, of course, more of these heavy rainfall events, whether it's urban flooding that impacts places like Houston or widespread river flooding, which we had much of in 2019 across three river basins over more than 12 states. And, of course, that's because a warmer atmosphere is a thirstier atmosphere. And these are the trends that science has shown that will be more likely the case in the future.
Thank you.
The next question is from Brian Walsh from Axios. Your line is now open.
Hi, this question's for Adam Smith. I'm just trying to get a sense if it's possible to attribute, you know, the role of climate change to specifically the wildfires in the West in August and in Hurricane Laura. I mean, how much do we know at this point can be attributed to warming and to climate change?
Hi, this is Adam Smith again. I would like to defer a clear answer on that for the specific events, because we'd prefer to wait for the attribution analysis. But looking at previous studies and trends like we just spoke about, indeed, it would be amiss for us to say that climate change is playing a role in increasing the frequency of some of these events that lead to billion-dollar disasters, most notably the rise in vulnerability to drought in these semi-arid regions, particularly west of the Rockies, and lengthening wildfire seasons, more intense wildfires in the western states like we're experiencing again this year, but also the potential for extremely heavy rainfall becoming more common in the eastern states as the atmosphere gets warmer and gets more loaded with moisture. Of course, also sea surface temperature fuels, it's just one of the many ingredients that can fuel a strong hurricane, but that's another trend that's happening that's not on our side with respect to extremes.
The next question is from Scott Johnson from Ars Technica. Your line is now open.
Thanks. I think this is a question for Brad. I'm just wondering, sort of beyond the drought outlook, which is obviously relevant, and I'm wondering if there's anything in the outlook that you can say about wildfire season conditions for California as we kind of get into the late part of the year where the Santanas and Diablos have kicked up in previous years and really gotten bad. So is there anything relevant there?
Yes. Hey, Scott. This is Brad Pugh. So, October, November, December, that's typically increasingly wet time of year, especially Northern California. And with La Nina conditions, we are expecting improving conditions towards the Oregon border. But as you move southward towards Central and Southern California, persistence or development is forecast. So, and also, our seasonal temperature outlook is calling for above normal temperatures. So, I guess with those two factors in mind, expanding drought and above normal temperatures during the October, November, December timeframe, that would certainly elevate the chances for continued elevated wildfire risk.
As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then one, unmute your phone, and record your name clearly when prompted. One moment while we wait on our next question. The next question is from Seth Borenstein from the Associated Press. Your line is now open.
Thanks. And this is for Ira, and not to be Western obsessed, but when you look at the current drought map, you know, today's drought map that you share and talking about, I think it was 38% it was of the U.S., if you look at sort of west of the classic 100th meridian, it looks like around 90-some percent of the west is in drought. Do you have a figure for what percentage of the west would be in drought? And if you don't, who should I ask?
Yes, hi, Seth. For the West, I can get that information for you. The 38% or 39%, I got it. That was for the entire contiguous U.S. Let me see if I can get a better number for you.
You have my email, just west of the 100.
Yeah, if you don't mind, I can send that specific information to you, yes.
Great. Thank you.
The next question is from Travis Devenick from Courthouse News Service. Your line is now open.
Hi, yeah, sorry if I missed this question already or something like it just now. I didn't hear the last one. But I'm in Texas, and one of y'all, Ira, I think it was you mentioned the U.S. Sort of gearing up towards its most drought-ridden year since 2011. Obviously, that was a time of a really bad drought here in Texas. I'm wondering if you could speak to it all, just what the forecast is looking like for drought in Texas in terms of, you know, are we headed toward another record bad year here like we had back then in 2011?
In terms of drought prediction, I would refer that to Brad.
Okay, sorry, sure.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, hello. Yeah, this is Brad Pugh. We are expecting expansion of drought across Texas during the next 3 months. We currently have a drought ongoing across West Texas. And in terms of trying to predict whether it would be similar to the 2011 drought, too early to say, but with the background state of La Nina conditions, it certainly supports a widespread drought, not only during the next 3 months, but as you move later into the winter and early spring.
I'm showing no further questions at this time.
Great. Thank you so much, Chelsea. If there are no other further questions, I'm going to wrap up the call. But first, I would like to thank all of our speakers for their time and everyone else for participating in this conference call. And also, I want to end by reminding everyone to mark your calendar for some upcoming releases. The release of the September 2020 U.S. climate statistics will be scheduled for October 7th. The release of the September 2020 global climate statistics is scheduled for October 14th, and the media telecom for the September U.S. and global climate report will be at 11 a.m. Eastern Time on Thursday, October 15th. And finally, an audio file of this call will be posted on the NOAA.gov media advisory site later today. Now, if you have any other further informational needs, please email me at nefdis.ca@noaa.gov. And this concludes today's call. Thanks.
This concludes today's conference. All participants may disconnect at this time.